What's up? Welcome to episode 326 of the PS4 Blackcast. I am JCM. With us this week is Isley.
Yo.
MSI, unfortunately, is sick, so she will not be joining us today. I figured that was going to be the case. I saw her posting on, you know, Twitter and everything, and how she just was feeling like hot trash. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure she's going to be too sick for Saturday. But that's fine. It's a dead week. I have like four articles to talk about, and we don't even have to spend too much time on them because there wasn't that much. Like, I know Comic-Con's going on right now, but of course there wasn't a ton of game stuff out of it, at least. There was leaked footage for the Avengers game, and then apparently a tease that Miss Marvel's in the game. So we'll see what happens. But and as far as new releases this week, I don't think there was anything. I tried looking on the store. There was a surprise flash sale, but the games weren't really that good. But there's not much there. And I don't think anything's new.
I think it's just, I feel like these surprise flash sales are just 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's like almost every week there's a sale. Like this one's funny. It's like, and soon. And they also had this weird PlayStation Retro sale up to 50% off, which is like different than the other one. But it's like the quality of the games this time around. Like the retro sale, you know, it's fine. You can get Onimusha Warlords for $12. The Hitman HD collection, like it's all these collections. Spyro remastered game bundles on discounted. So is the Reignited Trilogy. Oh, that's a Spyro plus Crash remastered bundle. So you can get Spyro, the Trilogy, and the Crash games for $41.24. So that is a great deal. And then Castlevania Requiem is on sale for a total of $12. So that's 40% off. And of course has Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood. So if you enjoyed Bloodstained and you want to play another game just like it, you can get Symphony of the Night. And then a bunch of other games. Shenmue 1 and 2, of course you can get those. Super Bomberman R, interesting. But yeah, these deals, of course. The problem with the deals on the weekends, when we record on the weekends, like, either A, they're a week long and there's plenty of time to tell them, or there's no point in really talking about them because they're going to end on Monday morning. But yeah, just always keep your eyes on the store. This one, typically they announce them, like, ahead of time, but, like, this week I felt like this one just popped up out of nowhere. It's like, bam, here's a sale, like, the news articles on it. Typically it's, they give you a nice little lead time.
Like I said, I feel they're frequent enough that you should just check the store regularly.
Yeah, definitely. But moving on to news, we got a release date for Tropico 6 for consoles. It is going to be launching on September 27th on PS4 and Xbox One. Of course, the game had already released on a PC, but it's good. It takes a while for them to port it over to the consoles. I did play some of Tropico 5. I kind of like the idea. I had fun with it. I didn't play it a ton. I forget when it came out and what else it came out against. But I remember picking it up, I think, as part of like a, I don't know if it was one of those spend $100, get 15 back deal windows or what. But I did pick it up. I know I picked up, I think, on sale or something. But I played a little bit of it. It was fun. It was like it's like SimCity, but you're a dictator. So it's just, you're kind of a dick with every decision you're making, which is interesting about it. We also had Borderlands 3 news that it apparently is going to be supporting crossplay after launch. This is from Randy Pitchford on Twitter. He said, some folks may be speculating that this thing, they were teasing something. This is prior to the trailer that came out this week for Borderlands 3. It was just one of those musical trailers. It was a fine trailer, a lot of color to it, spectacle. Not a lot of in-game stuff, but a fun little like tone piece. And prior to that announcement, it was kind of being teased. So he was going onto Twitter to kind of temper expectations, because he was saying some folks may be speculating that the thing tomorrow may be about crossplay. Tomorrow's thing is awesome, but it's not about crossplay. But good news, we are committed to supporting crossplay for Borderlands 3 with our partners as soon as practical after launch. So that apparently is something they're working on for post-launch support for Borderlands 3 to be able to do crossplay. So it'll be interesting to see which platforms, if it's just PC and Xbox, if it's Xbox and PlayStation.
I was going to say, I have a bad feeling it's going to be PC, Xbox.
I feel like Sony will definitely jump on board now, especially since, I mean, Call of Duty is going to have cross-platform play when that launches this year. So you figure they're like, hey, maybe we'll just...
With Xbox?
Yeah, it's Call of Duty. I'll pull up that. That article was announced. That was from E3.
Oh, cool. Maybe it will be then.
I guess that was the event. Let's see. Call of Duty cross-platform. Let's see. So this is from an article from Polygon back on May 30th. So this is right before E3. So it's here we go. This is who are they quoting here? I can't see. It's just a statement from Infinity Ward. So, with the launch of Modern Warfare, the team is taking steps to unite the community. First, the team plans for Modern Warfare to be played together across PC and console through cross-play support. Also, the team is limiting traditional season pass, yada, yada, yada. So, now they don't come out and say specifically, definitely PS4 and Xbox, but they do say consoles, or cross PC and console. So eventually they say consoles.
Console. No S.
Yeah, no S. But yeah, I can't imagine that Sony would let Microsoft be the only one. I mean, they already have cross-platform play on their stuff now. Dauntless game, which is like the free-to-play Monster Hunter World MMO thing, that has cross-platform play. And then, of course, you have Fortnite, and I'm trying to think of what else is cross-platform play. Obviously 14 between PC and console, but I can't imagine that they wouldn't allow it. But that'll be interesting. Of course, if it's post-launch, it's kind of like, well, I mean, I'm probably going to play at launch, so I'm curious how many people are going to be like, oh, I'll wait, or like they have one friend on PlayStation gets it, but then the guy on Xbox isn't going to get it for, you know, a couple weeks. Are they going to wait? You know, yada, yada. But I feel like the fans of that franchise are going to want to play that franchise once it comes out. You know what I mean?
It's going to be really interesting if there's crossplay between Xbox and PS4, but people on Steam can't even play Borderlands. That's going to be a really weird scenario, like a kind of a reversal.
Well, because they're Epic Game Store exclusive now, right?
Yeah.
Didn't they refund, or are they one of the ones that are committing to the keys they already gave for Steam, but just canceled pre-orders altogether for everybody else?
I can't remember what they did. I want to say they refunded Steam people, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, maybe it was a Metro. It's like every time that was happening where a game was going from one to another, it was always like, oh, they just halt the pre-orders, but they still commit to the original pre-order keys for those people. Like, oh, 100 people pre-ordered, you'll still get your Steam key, but anybody else after today's date is going to have to get on the Epic Game Store.
I don't think they did that. I think it was you can get a free Epic Game Store key, and then maybe if it comes out on Steam like a year later or something, I think they committed to giving a key.
I don't know. It's the stories I always see, but I don't really commit to memory because I'm not a PC person. So it's like in one ear, out the other. But and then we also have the announcement of Plants vs. Zombies 3. No other information. No, you know, details on release date, yada, yada, none of that. It was just, hey, Plants vs. Zombies 3 is under construction. It's like, all right. I played a lot of the first one. I didn't play too much of the second one. I didn't have any problem with the microtransactions in it because I felt like if you just, that was definitely one of those cases where, there was a lot of outrage about it. But when I played, I'm like, if you just play the game, it doesn't matter. Like, that, I never felt like I was bogged down by the microtransactions. Like, I was being forced to have to use them. Like, I felt like I could still play a ton of this game, and I don't need it. I can still progress. Like, there was no... It was just, like, one of those people didn't play it, but they heard it, so they jump on that bandwagon of, it's bad, bad, bad. But it's like, it really wasn't that egregious.
I played a ton of the first one. I played a tiny bit of the second one, but something about the second one just didn't really have the kind of I don't want to say like enjoyment or love behind it. It just like something about it didn't click with me, and the microtransactions didn't bother me at all. I think it was just kind of like the whole Plants vs. Zombies hype of the first game, and the humor and everything kind of wore off by the second one for me.
Right, like that novelty of it when it first came out, because it was like, oh, here's a tower defense game, and I hadn't played a tower defense game in a long time. I know they had was it Pixel Junk Monsters, one of the Pixel Junk games on PS3, which I didn't play. I played the demo of, and I was like, oh, okay, but I didn't really do tower defense games. So when they released that game onto PlayStation last gen, it was like, I got it, and I was like, oh man, this game is fun. I played a ton of it. I think I played it on my iPad. I don't remember, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. So then, but of course, I think it was one of those situations too where when PvZ2 came out, there was a lot of other stuff, like big actual games that came out at the time, or it came out when there was more games as service stuff. Like maybe I'm gonna look at the release date. Plants versus Zombies.
I think it was also exclusive for a while, if I remember correctly.
I don't think it ever came out on console. No, yeah, it was only Android and iOS. So it came out on July 9th, 2013. So this would have been right before Next Gen launched. Or did it launch in 2012? No, it was 2013. So it's like that summer, I'm trying to think of what I would have played. I guess GTA would have come out shortly after, because GTA came out before that, and I'm trying to see what else. Yeah, it's like, so it must have been the things, like, by the time I got to it, it was like, well, now I got PS4, I'm playing Battlefield, Assassin's Creed, Killzone, you know, and also I think in that summer I was, oh, that's what it was too, I was playing Final Fantasy 14 on PS3, so it's like, and there you go, games of service. I'm playing that. And then I stopped playing that once PS4 came out, and I waited for the PS4 port. But yeah, it's like, that was just, it came out just at a bad time for me. That's why I didn't put too much time into it. But yeah, let's see here. Gumi is the best dragon. How dare you? This is an 81 Honda. How dare you? Yeah, so that'd be interesting. I'm curious if I'll bring it to consoles, because that would be nice to at least have. I always thought it was weird that it didn't come out later, but oh well. Other news, we also have the announcement that Tim Willits will be leaving id Software. He's, of course, the director. He's been at the studio 24 years. He said, quote, "After 24 years, I've decided to leave id Software. After QuakeCon, I've been extremely lucky to work with the best people in the industry on truly amazing games. QuakeCon has been an unbelievable part of my journey, and I look forward to seeing everyone at the Gaylord Texan." That's where, of course, it's held. "All the games currently in development are in very good hands. My departure will not affect any planned release. id Software is packed full of amazing talent that will continue to develop long into the future some of the best shooters in the world." So that's I mean, that is, you know, someone working 24 years at a place, that kind of makes sense when they announce that they're leaving. I mean, Carmack left way back, but that was when Oculus was coming out. But of course I felt like the departure of Carmack was bigger because he was the behind the tech, and everything. So, but yeah, he's gone. And then the last, oh, maybe not. I had just an extra tab I had open for Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Yeah, that was, that's kind of it. There was that one story about the Ubisoft Watch Dogs hit record kerfluffle, which I thought was pointless.
What was that? Oh, that's the Joseph Gordon-Levitt thing.
Yeah, where some devs are like mad because you should pay the people, but it's like, it. Every time I listen to people talk about it, it's a thing where it's clearly only fans are going to be the ones who are going to do this thing, who are going to, fans of that franchise or whatever, are going to do this. It's not going to be like, you know, Hans Zimmer creating some music or Troy Baker writing up a bunch of music.
Well, I think the argument is basically that the fans are essentially being exploited because they're fans,
but
into working for far cheaper.
It's not, I don't see it that way, because if this was the entirety of the soundtrack in the game and they were crowdsourcing it to the fans for all the tracks and pulling all, you know, 100 something tracks they got in the game for them, I'd be like, okay, yeah, clearly. But they've already got music that they're paying for. They said they have like 100, like again, 100 something tracks they're paying for already. They're legit. This is just a way for fans to get some songs in on the radio in the game, which I think is totally fine. It's I don't see it being some big, you know, group who plays legit gigs all the time doing work that doesn't really net them any benefit versus people who in their free time like to do stuff and be creative. And it's like, hey, I'll pitch in a drum beat, you know, or something like this, and someone else can add to it. And hey, we get in the game. That'd be dope. It's just like a fan thing. I feel like that's totally fine.
The weird thing to me is I feel like this happened with, like, Watch Dogs 2, I guess. And then this Hit Records thing disappeared, and nobody talked about it at all since then. And now it's come back for this new Watch Dogs. Like, I don't remember anything in the news about this Hit Records since Watch Dogs.
No, the original Hit Record thing was with... The announcement came with Beyond Good and Evil 2 and how they could do some stuff. People, fans could create some stuff to be put into the game.
Okay, so it was still Ubisoft, just yeah. Not... Okay.
But it was still... There was some concern there, but it's like the stuff you create still stays on their service and can be used by anybody else, so it can keep being paid for down the line. It's not like you lose the rights to it. It's still your stuff. So, but I mean, again, I just think it's being overblown because it's not 100% of the music in the game. It's hardly a fraction.
Truthfully, there's probably some bit of exploitation there, but not nearly as much as people are saying. And if you're going to go down that rabbit hole, I mean, you can look at other games. Like, how do you argue against something like Mario Maker or Dreams, where the entire game is based around people creating content for each other?
Right, and Nintendo doesn't pay. If Nintendo is relying on that UGC from the community and not paying them anything, it's charging them for the internet, you know, service that they're doing in order to create those levels to perpetuate their own game. I mean, Mario Maker 2 was the best-selling game of June. So it's like, you're exactly right. So you're like, what's the difference?
If you go down that, yeah, there's just a lot of, like, complexity to the issue that most of the people looking into this aren't really going to examine. And when you're just ignoring a lot of that complexity, you come away with, you know, outrage and such over things that probably don't really matter that much.
And again, too, I mean, it's $2,000 if they choose your song, which is split between everybody who contributed to the track that was being created, you know, which is fine. But if it was to be somehow, you know, because Mike Bithell was one of the ones complaining and some other people got in there as well on Twitter, like saying they should be paid way more, yada, yada. Okay, so let's say now Ubisoft is like, all right, you write the songs, we'll pay you $30,000 for to put it in our game. Okay, but now that means you've just increased the barrier of entry because the quality of the people that are going to be contributing is way higher than the fans who would probably make something. You know what I mean? Like the people who have a little bit of spare time from their day job and their whatever, they, you know, they got their kids after work or they, you know, they do this or that. And like, oh, for this $2,000 thing, they might contribute some small thing because they used to play guitar when they were, you know, before the kids or whatever. Like, so they have this passion for just playing it. They just record something. Now you got these people who are like, oh, it's $30,000. We do good quality stuff because we're a legit band. Suddenly the fans, the actual fan stuff is just going to get tossed out because it's going to be, you know, in theory, subpar because of the quality increase. So I feel like it's a disservice really to the fans who actually want their, would love, who would be much more appreciative of having their stuff chosen versus these people who maybe have their own label or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm kind of hypocritical with it in the sense that I say, like, yeah, there's probably some exploitation going on with, like, artists and things. But then I think of if I was in that situation and, like, Naughty Dog asked me to help out, like, 3D modeling shit for them, I'd probably jump at the opportunity just to say I did it.
Right. And then you could always use this too. Like, I mean, because a good example is when people talk, like, I think it was kind of funny. Greg was talking about it because him and Andrew and Renee, I think we're talking about it on their podcast this week. And one of the things he was talking about is how people have created artwork or he has asked, you know, I'm kind of butchering, so I might not quote it exactly, but basically kind of this idea that people would create this fan art or this work for Kinda Funny, which, you know, was and they to use for free kind of thing. But then that could be a doorway into, okay, well, now future stuff we'll definitely pay you for. So I could see people who maybe make this stuff, turns out to be good, and then they're just like, okay, we can make some more outside of Hit Record that could potentially, it's like it could be a gateway into getting into something like, oh, I had a lot of fun doing this. Now maybe I'll pursue this, you know, music creation thing more legit, either on Hit Record or some other avenue, you know, Fiverr, who knows, and make more money from it. It's like it could be a good doorway for someone into that that aspect of either right. game dev or just creation in general.
Which, like I said, the outrage, it's usually, yes, from an outside perspective, something seems a bit hinky, but when you think about it as you being a fan of something else, I'm sure there's people out there that would, pretty much everyone would do something for a lower amount of money because of someone they admire.
Yeah. If it was like, you know, it's Watch Dogs, it's like, yo, create some street art or, you know, some, not like a tag, but just some like good graffiti, and or show us the work you've done, and then we'll just pick one, throw it in the game. It's like, I feel like as just some, like, I don't do any street art or anything, but you know what I mean? Like, if they took it, like you submitted your picture, then they just recreated that and put it in the world of Watch Dogs. It's like, I feel like that'd be really cool. It's like, just as a fun little thing to do. But anyways, yeah, it's a, so I thought that was just a little ridiculous, but yeah, other than that, again, there wasn't a whole lot. Quiet week, nothing crazy. The final week of the current season of Fortnite, and I think the event happens today too, that because there's always an event that happens during the leading into the last week, and this one is supposed to be some giant robot fighting a monster, I think, or something. But I haven't been playing much. I didn't play any this season. I barely played last season. But yeah, and then, of course, one thing I found out that was really cool, and obviously this is only for people who are familiar with Fortnite's Battle Pass and who play Apex currently, because Apex, of course, introduced, they're in their second season. In their second season, they introduced challenges, much like the Fortnite challenges, and I think PUBG did challenges as well, because they had the Battle Pass way after Fortnite did it, because Fortnite was the first Battle Pass. but Fortnite had these challenges introduced in their game early on, and so Apex kind of adopted that for Season 2, where it's stuff like, you know, play as a specific character, or get X amount of kills as a character, or play a certain group of three characters for 20 games, or get top three with this character, or, you know, get a headshot with sniper rifles, do damage with shotguns, stuff like that. Usual challenges if you're familiar with Fortnite. But I found out yesterday that what makes it different than Fortnite, which actually was a huge plus, and I wasn't even aware of it, was that Fortnite was, all the weekly challenges in Fortnite were the same for everybody across the board. So Fortnite was infamous for the worst challenges being land at X location or search chests in a specific point of interest. Because then everybody on the server at the beginning of that week would just land at that spot. And it's like, okay, if 100 people land at one location, the odds of you getting the treasure chest is like not. You're not going to get it. You're probably going to die. It's always open 7. So typically those are like the worst. People hated that challenge. So I was looking at my week 3 Apex challenges. And I had one that's like, you know, land here. They have the land ones just like Fortnite does. Land at this place, land at that place. And it has like, you have to do it 4 different times, different matches. And then there was one I know, it's like open supply bins in airbase. I was like, oh, so it's basically the treasure chests of Fortnite. I'm like, great, that's in Apex. But I had one last week where it was like land at a location and do, or not land, but do 200 points worth of damage in this point of interest. And I kept trying to land there, and no one else is going there. And I always thought it was really weird. Like, does no one need this challenge? Like, shouldn't we all be here duking it out, getting 200 damage? And then when I was playing with a buddy of mine, he was saying how I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I got this challenge. He's like, oh, that doesn't sound like my challenge. He's like, I think the challenges are different. So when we got to the main menu, he read off his, and then I went through mine. And, yeah, they randomly generate the challenges. So the challenges are not the same for everybody across the board, which makes it so much better than the Battle Pass challenges from Fortnite. Because now you don't have people always landing at the same point of interest to get kills, to land there as part of a challenge, to open the bins. I'm like, that is so fucking smart to shuffle the challenges in the Battle Pass. I'm like, that's like a great innovation on the Battle Pass system. I'm like, thank you. I'm like, this explains so much why I thought it was so weird that people didn't A, want to land somewhere, or B, you know, do XYZ. I'm like, oh,
it's which so is good. Amusing because the way you describe it sounds like it would be so obvious to just be like, oh yeah, this is the way it is. It seems like you, it seems almost like it should have always just been randomized at Fortnite.
Yeah, I think it must have been because they were the first ones to do it. It was probably just like, oh, we'll just make it across the board, because then there's much more control to make sure, because they group theirs into things like, oh, these ones are, they categorize them as easy, medium, and hard. Like, win a match was always considered hard, but then everybody has to win a match, and there's a lot of people who like playing the game, but they don't necessarily win all the time. So that was always one of the meme challenges, like, you know, win a match and play with a friend. Those are the meme challenges. But later they came out with the Silver Battle Pass, where you can do Battle Pass challenges and rank up, but you couldn't do the three extra ones that were actually part of the Battle Pass, which usually gave more points towards leveling up your Battle Pass. And there's some free items you get. So the free aspect of it, I feel like that required them to really just monitor and control. I think it's because they do so much weird stuff too in Fortnite, that's way more, because it's way more cartoony. Like, they'll have jump through these rings in the sky. So when you jump from the battle bus, you have to fly through these rings that are in the air. And so obviously they couldn't make that, put those on the map, but then not have that same challenge for everybody. Granted, of course, once you finish that challenge, the rings go away. They don't load for you anymore. But I feel like because they do things too, like find these hidden items, and then it's probably just easy. It's better to just have everybody have to do that to find the work that you put into the game versus maybe just a couple. But yeah, for the base ones, like landing, chest searching, weapon kill specific stuff, those definitely could have been randomized. And just keep those big, you know, treasure hunt ones kind of server wide, you know. But yeah, definitely make it different. But yeah, it makes so much sense too in there for like in Apex, where it's like play as X legend or play as one of three legends for certain games. Like, if everybody had that, it's like they'd all be vying for that particular one. Like, oh, of those three, this is the best one. So everybody's always trying to pick that same one, and then you can never get that challenge done unless you're the first pick. But yeah, it's just, it's so smart and such a great, once I found that out, I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. But
this changes everything.
Yeah, you're right. It was like this, mind blown. I was like, why didn't they say this when they announced it? Like, it's so good. But yeah, season two, I love the ranked system. It definitely makes, it's so fun just because it's like now the final circles are just so many more squads in the final couple circles than there is on casual. And it's just, it's nuts. I really enjoy the ranked play. I think it's a lot of fun. They do have a lot of server issues right now they got to fix. A lot of server disconnects. Two different code errors they talked about. One that's client-side and one that's server-side. But they're working on it. But yeah, that's like the only problem with the ranked play right now is the disconnect when you're trying to load in. Which could be random. It affects a lot of people, but it's pretty obnoxious. But yeah, other than that, that's basically it for the news. So we can probably just go straight into what we're playing. Again, it's probably going to be a short episode. We've been doing 30 minutes now. But have you been playing anything new recently?
Not new. So I went back and started playing Hellblade again. Mm-hmm. Just because there was one trophy that I never got. So I figured might as well go get it. And honestly, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I thought about replaying. When you talked about that, I was like, I wonder if I should just replay the game, like put it on easy and just replay for the story real quick.
Well, so the few things I forgot, like I remember the sound being really good and the facial animations. I forgot how long some of the fights are because it has that auto-scaling difficulty. So the first boss fight I did, which was Valraven, the fight probably took me a good like 25 minutes. Because I hadn't died at that point at all, and I remembered all the controls. I mean, it was basically parry and win. So the difficulty scaled up, and that fight took fucking forever. And I haven't done the second one yet. I can't remember what his name was, but the fire giant guy.
Suitor.
Yeah, I think that's who it was. Haven't done him yet, but I've been enjoying it. I'm going through it very slowly and kind of taking my time. The first time I played through, I kind of rushed through since it was new and everyone wanted to talk about the story and everything. And this time I'm kind of going much more slowly and checking everything out, taking advantage of like the photo mode, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it was a lot of good game. I don't remember the boss fights being crazy long, but it's been a while. Yeah, I haven't. Aside from the problem with the Battle Pass and Apex, now I'm just playing Apex a bunch. Especially the ranked, because I like playing that. And I'm like, I need to get back. They just released the last Assassin's Creed Atlantis DLC for Odyssey, and I'm like, it's all out now. And I still haven't even started episode 2 of The Legacy of the First Blade. So I got to get in there. I'll probably do that today, play some. I don't know. We'll see. But, that, and I got to jump back into Bloodstained because I played a bunch of Bloodstained I talked about last time where I got pretty far and I'm really, it clicked and I'm really enjoying that now, but I got to get back to that. There's just, said it because my game time isn't really a lot at the end of the day. It's like I don't start gaming until about 7. And then it's like, got 2 hours, 2.5, maybe 3 hours, depending on how long I go for if I don't want to watch anything. But yeah, just keep playing Apex. It's so easy, but then it's like because every match is different and who you play with is different and who you might be is different every time. It's like it just it, yeah, I was just, oh, play another one. I'll just play another one. I'll just one more game. It's like it's too much with that. But I did start replay do Civ 6. I forget why I started playing Civ. Oh, because yeah, I got it on the Switch. So I found out that there was cloud saves for between PC and between Steam and Nintendo Switch. You can't do it with the recent DLC expansions, but I don't own those. Like the big Rise and Fall and Gathering Storm. But I don't own those DLCs. I still just have the base game plus the free Aztec DLC. But you can cloud save with it. And I thought that was really cool. So if I ever wanted to. So I was trying it out where I tried a game. I started on the Switch just to see how it performed. And then I test out the cloud save to see how it goes. And yeah, it's straightforward. But yeah, then I started playing just a whole campaign on Steam, and but I wasn't playing at all like my normal strategy. Like typically, I can go like science victory all the way. But oh, man, that game! I don't know how much. Do you play Civ? Have you ever played Civ?
I've played it before. I haven't played it in a while, though.
I played like a ton of Civ 5 back when that came out. I played put in not a
I
ton.
want to
I
say I
put it.
played Civ 4 a ton, and that was the one.
Yeah. Civ 5, I put like 170 hours into it, so not necessarily a lot, but considering there's no story mode, you're just playing campaign, I guess that could be a lot for Civ, because but then I Civ 6, I was playing a bunch, and then I'm playing the game. Rush is next to me. Peter something, Stormir, he's next to me. No, it's a Peter, if I forget the leader's name. So it's Russia, and I noticed, motherfucker, he expands super close to my territory, but he only gets like 3 tiles. Or a couple tiles around him because there's not that much space. He's just being a douchebag expanding. So I buy all the tiles around him. Then later in the game, I notice dude starts garrisoning all his units into the city next to my border. And I'm like, well, this is classic AI surprise war strats. Like, I know what happens in Civ. I'm really familiar. Even though he's happy with me and he's trading, I know what's about to happen. He's going to surprise war me. So I move my units next to his border. I'm like, well, I'm just gonna prepare for this shit. Motherfucker has the gall to go, hey, I don't like that your troops are so close to my border. And I could either do the options like ignore, I could say tough shit, or I could say, nah, my guy's just passing. I'm like, nah, dude, just passing through. And he's like, okay. And then a couple turns later, of course, surprise war. And so I start fighting. So I
And
start.
you respond back, I don't like how your troops are close to my border.
I I don't know how to do that in Civ 6. Like, I think you have to have either some diplomatic thing going on to get that. Because I remember in Civ 5, I remember being able to tell people, yo, hey, don't quit expanding towards me. And they'd be like, all right, we'll stop. Or when you captured spies or killed spies in Civ 5, I can go to that leader and be like, hey, quit fucking spying on me. And they'd be like, oh, my bad. But I don't know how to do that in Civ 6. I don't remember if that's an option because I go to the dialogue and I think you have to be either friendly or, again, you have to have an embassy established. Like, I don't know if you can do it early game. I don't know what. But I couldn't say the same shit to him. Like, hey, you guys are a little too close to my border. But so then we start the war. I'm like, okay, so of course I have a shit ton of gold, buy a bunch of units, have them all near the border. I'm fighting him, killing his stuff. All of a sudden, a couple turns into the war. The game's like, yo, you got a penalty. I'm all, what the fuck is this penalty for? It's like, you didn't keep your promise you made to Peter about keeping your troops away from his border. I'm like, motherfucker started a surprise war on me, and you're going to penalize that I, quote, broke my promise to move my troops away? I was like, what the fuck is this? So I'm like, uh-uh, Peter, fucking took three of his cities, waited. I didn't even negotiate peace right away. I'm like, no, you're going to give me some shit before I negotiate this peace. So he gave me like a bunch of art. I'm like, good, because people will buy that shit off me for a high price. I'll buy it at a high price. But took his cities, make peace, and then, of course, sell the art to the other civs. And then, but now I got this fucking warmongering penalty, so no one likes me anymore. I'm like, whatever, I don't care. Everybody denounces me, but they still want my luxury resources. But I was so mad. And then, like, later, he was in a war with America. I'm like, I still don't like you.
You're on your own, fucker.
Yeah, I'm like, well, I can't. At this point, nobody likes me because I'm a warmonger. Because I kept the cities. Instead of, like, if I had just stayed in my territory and fought him off until he made peace after a couple, like, 10 turns, then I would be fine. But because I took his city, I didn't even raise the city. I kept it. It's like, because I took it, it's like that they just, you get hit with this huge fucking penalty. It takes 20 million years to go away. Like, you can, if you had the gold, you could just buy everybody's loyalty back. But it's just a pain. And then Congo has pissed me off. So I went to war with him just because I didn't like him, took one of his cities. And then later when he was in war, when Peter was in war with America, I was like, I surprise attacked Russia, which I was able to do with a little less of a penalty because of some sort of agreement or Cecil Belli. I forget what the reason was. It was like either expansion or something. There's like different, if you just go to war, you get hit with like huge warmonger. But if you do it because they did something to offend you or broke a promise, like, you can go to war with a much lower penalty cost. And the game tells you, like, hey, yo, if you want, you can go to war for, you know, this reason because you've earned it now. But so I went to war with him again, took his shit.
You've earned it now.
You've earned it, yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, your roommate keeps trash in the house. You're like, well, now you can go to war with them because they're trash in the house and you don't want them to do that. But unfortunately, because I was so focused on, I kind of turned from science victory to like just domination, but there's way too many civs and it was way too late game. I didn't even realize that the Congo was about to get the culture victory. So then I lost the game and Congo got the culture victory. And I'm like, God damn it. But it was a fun game. I was just so mad at the game for penalizing me about the troop stuff. I was like, get the fuck out of here. But one of my favorite parts is that when you counter spy and you capture enemy spies, like, I could have sworn in Civ 5 you have the option to, if you capture a spy, you could straight up give the spy back or hold it until they ask for it back and they give you some money, or you can kill the spy. But in 6 it's like you either capture or you kill and it's automatic. And I don't know how to choose one or the other. Like, I got to dig in, see if it's some advanced option I don't know about. But I always love capturing because I prefer to capture because you can only make so many spies. And it was always the same civs I was capturing spies from. I'm like, if I just capture all their spies, they can't do this shit anymore. But it's like I would love to be able to just choose to kill or capture. But yeah, it's a good time. I really enjoy Civ. The fact it's on a Switch, I'm surprised they don't, if they don't never make like a console version of it. It's like, you have it on the Switch. It's on the phones and iPads. Like, I don't know why you
didn't
won't just...
one of them come to console?
Well, that's like, on Xbox, it was Civ Revolution. It was like Civ Lite.
Okay.
But there no proper Civ 6 or Civ 5. Like, you have XCOM on consoles, and that's definitely very much like a... Like, because people are thinking, oh, you need a mouse to play Civ. You need a mouse. I'm like... Or a keyboard. I'm like, not really much. I mean, you could do just fine. I mean... sure, the Switch and iPhones and iPads have touchscreens, but I'm like, you could easily do stuff with a controller on Civ, or just give mouse support, and then there you go, problem solved. But I wouldn't mind being able to play on like a bigger TV and stuff like that. But that's one of those games too, where it's like, it's a lot like StarCraft, where I would love to play Civ multiplayer, but I don't know anyone to play Civ, and I don't want to play with a bunch of randos. Like, I just want to kind of casually play. But but yeah, aside from playing those, that and Mario Maker every now and then.
Have you made any Kaizo levels yet?
I haven't made any levels. I've just been playing levels. Don't know if I'd make anything. But there's some really fun levels out there, though, I was playing.
There's some phenomenal ones. There's some hot garbage ones and a lot of trolley ones.
Yeah, that's the problem with the troll ones, where it's like, you got to make a blind jump. And either you make it or you don't, because you can't see what's coming. And it's like, oh, or it's like, you know, go through a door. And it's like, oh, you went through the wrong door. That means you lose. Like, it's like, those levels are dumb. It's like, boo, just mark them down.
I mean, everyone knows they're dumb. It's just, there's no getting around it. Like, there's no way to stop those shit levels.
No, that's the problem, is because I'll do, like, when I play, I'll do the course world, which is just... You choose the difficulty, and it pulls maps. It pulls levels that are based on that difficulty ranking, and then you just do like it's a challenge, you know, see how many levels you can beat in a row before you lose all your lives. And right. If you're playing easy, you only get a couple lives and yada yada. But I'll do it on like expert and everything and play those. And but the downside, it's just a shuffle. Sometimes you'll be the first person to play that new map or the new level. No one else has played it, so it's like, damn, this level's really tough. Or there's like this level that soft locked. You can soft lock yourself in the level. It's like there's no way out, and you got to just restart.
You should never be able to soft lock a level.
Yeah, well, the problem is it's hard to know if you soft lock your level, because you know what you're... So basically, the soft lock was, there is a... You jump up on this platform.
Oh, you mean just like getting trapped or something?
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Okay. So yeah, soft locking. Yeah, just you can't progress. It's like you trap yourself, and the person, of course, they knew what they're doing in the design, so they did the proper steps. But if you don't do that exact thing, you get stuck and you're soft locked, and you just have to just restart. It's like, come on, man, why would you do that?
Yeah, that happens a lot in the Kaizo levels.
But yeah, there's a lot of really fun, but mainly a lot of levels I'm playing too are from like the NLSS crew, because they're making some Mario Maker levels.
You should try the Mario Labs Studio Labs. The Twitch service has Mario Maker levels that are all kind of curated by well-known creators, and some of them are like Kaizo levels, some of them are just like hard, but they're all kind of curated as quality levels that are actually well made.
Yeah, maybe I'll look that up, because gotta do the dumb search by putting this code. It's just like, that's obnoxious. Unless you find the creator and you just favorite them, then you can always look them up in your favorites. This is what I did for one of the one guys whose levels I play, who make some really challenging levels that I liked a lot. But they weren't like BS levels, they're just really good. Yeah, it's a fun game. But yeah, other than that, I still haven't played Crash Team Racing or Crash Nitro Refueled. I want to play that. But again, that'll be one of the things where I don't know anybody else who has it. So if I want to play multiplayer, it's like, who am I going to play multiplayer with? Yeah, other than that, that's all I've been doing. Playing what's out and then just waiting for all the new stuff. And I was hoping Zaya would be here so you can talk about, because she finished... Shadowbringers. I was hoping she'd talk about that game.
And explain it to me.
Okay, so what we'll do is I'll explain to you what my cousin told me, and then next week she can do like the legit full explanation. We'll see how close it is.
Next week I can explain to her what your cousin explained to you that you then explained to me.
Sure, that sounds good. So, straight up spoilers for Shadowbringers. If you're playing FF Shadowbringers, which got like 9.5s across like from a bunch of sites, it gets reviewing really well. You can stop here because I'm just going to talk about Shadowbringers for the next couple minutes. So you can go ahead and tune out. But so the story is that there was... So the Askians, you know, the guys in the black cloaks that you see throughout 14 a lot. You remember them?
Sort of.
They're like the ones who are always like taunting the Warrior of Light and whispering in the ears of trying to control stuff. Sure. Yeah. Those guys wear the masks, black robes. Well, so it turns out that way back, you know, they're the first civilization. They're the precursors, the Askians. They're like super smart race of people, yada, yada. They had their world. Everything was perfect. And then there's some calamity that's either going to happen or does happen. But like it's everything on their planet is dying. Animals, the trees, all that stuff. Like their whole world is dying. So they come up with this Thanos idea that they are going to sacrifice 50% of their population to create, Heidelin is the light and the dark. I keep wanting to say Zodiark, but that doesn't sound right at all.
Zodiark was one of the summons in previous games.
Who is...
So he's probably in that game somehow.
Every time I say Zodiark, it makes me think of like a Yu-Gi-Oh. Let's just type in Zodiark FF14 FF.
No, you're cheating. That's not part of the game.
Well, I just want his name because I know who. It's different versus knowing who he is versus wanting to get his name right. I know exactly who he is. I just want to make sure I get his name right. Zodiark. I believe that's his name. Yeah, Zodiark. Okay, so I got it right. It was perfect. Okay, so they want to sacrifice 50% of the population to use their energy to create this being, Zodiark, to then repopulate the world with life. So they do that. So they sacrifice 50%. They create this, you know, being, Zodiark, replenishes life. Trees come back. Animals come back. All that stuff, and then more life everywhere else. And now the idea is that what they are going to do is once life rebuilds from, because I think that's even, it even rebuilds like not just, like I forget what happens to the Asgians, what they do. I think they go into hiding or something like that, but like the Humes, the Tarutarus, the Galka, I forget their names, 14. Like, the world gets populated with, like, legit species and life and everything, right? So thing goes better. And the idea is that once that life force gets big enough, they're going to sacrifice all of those living beings back to Zodiark to bring back the 50% of the Askians who sacrificed themselves. And then it'll be just the Askians on their world again that's flourishing with life. But, of course, all the stuff that got brought up is going to get destroyed. So that's their plan. Whatever, do it. But there's like a splinter faction that doesn't want to do this, and they don't like Zodiark. So, because they don't want to do any more sacrifice, yada, yada, yada. So they... The splinter group goes off and they kill themselves to create Heidelin, and they create Heidelin to stop Zodiark. So then Heidelin is the light. Zodiark is, of course, the dark. And then Heidelin, like, punches Zodiark and fractures a part of him. And she does this multiple times and fractures him into 13 pieces, which creates 13 realities.
Oh my god, Zaya is going to hate me trying to re-explain this to her.
So Zodiac is fractured.
Gonna be a friendship bender.
Yeah. So Zodiac is fractured into 13 pieces, and creates 13 realities. And the game FF14 takes place on the 8th instance. The Warrior of Dark that you see that pops up in the storyline, he's from one of the, I think he's from the 7th reality, and his light won. Light destroyed everything, and light's just, it's, even though it's supposed to be, you know, quote unquote, I guess, good, it's run amok. And the world is being just consumed by these sin eaters. You know, they're Heath Ledger from Sin Eater. They're just absorbing the sins. They're like these giant white deity looking things, and they're just, it's just too much. There's no balance. And that was this idea that there has to be a balance, because if there's too much dark, you know, things can go wrong. If there's too much light, things go wrong. There needs to be a balance. So he wants you, and basically what happens is the Askians that are still alive, that aren't part of that the splinter group that created Hydaelyn, their plan is still to, they want to rebuild Zodiac. So they've been going between all these realities and causing massive calamities to destroy them, these worlds. Because if they do that, once that whole planet is gone, that portion of Zodiac gets absorbed back into the Prime. And they're trying to rebuild him that way. So they've destroyed like 7 worlds. And the 8th is in the process of being fucked up right now. And then you're on the 9th or something like that. So that's why they're always trying to destroy shit in Final Fantasy 14. Is they're trying to destroy the world so they could have it go back to the Zodiac Prime and go on to the next instance. So then, that's the whole plan, is that they still want to complete their stuff. And like, but of course he didn't finish the game, so this is just, I think he's a couple missions ahead of time. Before this happens. But basically you meet up with the Warrior of Light and you go back. I think you're in the, he takes you to the Prime. That's what it is. You go to the Prime world, which is consumed by the light, because Hydaelyn's so just fucking strong, because Zodiac got punched 13 times or whatever. And you're helping him out. So I don't know what you're doing there and how you're supposed to help, but you're just there and everything. And he's like, he doesn't want this to happen to your world. Like, if the light just runs amok, your shit's gonna get destroyed, yada yada. So I don't know where the hell they're supposed to go from here once you do this crazy cosmic multiple realities of this planet. Like, I don't know. Oh, and you get to go to the Askian world. You get to see their actual their cities and stuff like that. I guess that's, you can go visit that in the game. That's supposed to be pretty dope. Some underwater city as well, I think. I don't remember. But or they're hiding. I think every instance where they're at, they're always hiding underwater, I think, is where they hid when the world was rebuilding from Zodiac. You know, because they're super powerful. They have like a lot of magic. That's how they were able to create Zodiac, is because they're so powerful, these beings. But yeah, so that's the whole thing. That's what they're doing in Shadowbringers. Of course, there's a lot of sub storylines in there, but he didn't tell me that. He just told me the big overarching stuff, and I'm like, that sounds pretty crazy, but I don't know, again, where you go with the next expansion. Like, do we not stop it, but then we go to the next instance and we try to help them do their problems? Like, is this some multiverse kind of situation we do? But it'll be I'm curious what happens at the end. That's why I wanted Zaya to be here. But yeah, that's basically, you find out the whole time that Hydaelyn is just this, you know, summon that's not really a god. That was the whole shocker from E3. But yeah, that they're not they're just the first of the summons. But
I got this. I can totally explain this again.
Yeah, I did a much more straightforward version of what he did, because he was kind of meandering here and there, and I was asking him questions like, well, what about this, what about that.
I was being completely sarcastic. I've already forgotten most of what you said.
Oh, I can't wait for
it's
you to
gonna
recap.
Be a mess.
Yep. So yeah, we can look forward to that next time when you recap that to Zaya and she corrects you. But that'll be fun. Anyways, I guess that'll wrap it up. for this week. So thank you for anyone who stuck around, who got either FF14 Shadowbringers spoiled for them, or who are just shaking their heads right now at me recapping the story from my cousin. But we will go over the real thing next week. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Isley, for joining.
Yep.
And we will see you all next time.
Later.